Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. Good evening. All right, try it again. Hello, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to do some video streaming a little bit later in the program. Another chat today with a couple of my friends. And afterwards, I took a walk, went off, spent some time by myself, and I was thinking about this whole thing about how you can call it corporatism or capitalism, whatever you want to say it, however you want to say it. I started thinking about that again because the news, you know, today is about the Gulf fishermen working where the toxic fumes saturate the air. They're getting sick. God only knows what the long-term effects of this gusher will be. This is just like the soldiers that we sent to Iraq both times, who were exposed to all sorts of toxins and are now having children, grandchildren, who are viciously deformed because of what our soldiers were exposed to. More corporate America, more capitalist America that did that. The people, the fishermen who have been put out of work, the shrimpers, the lobstermen. I guess they don't have lobsters down there. Shrimp, whatever. They who have been hired for minimum wage by this filthy oil company. And the oil companies told them, you want to keep your job, don't put on a respirator. So they're getting sick. BP, they say it must be food poisoning. So here we have another example of capitalism ripping out profits and leaving the workers to get sick and die. How many examples of this does it take before people who claim to be in this country, if you ask them, if you push hard enough, they would say, yeah, I believe in corporate America. I believe in capitalism. What the hell's wrong with that goddamn communist on the air there, Mike Malloy? What's wrong with him? How long is it going to take? What's it going to take before people can look at what has happened, not just with this oil spill? You know, what about the weapons industry? Rocky Flats, Colorado. An area that is so toxic and so full of poison, there's no way to clean it up. The weapons industry walked away from it. What about the fact that capitalism took its manufacturing and left our cities for first Mexico and then China? And what did they leave behind? You've seen the pictures of the abandoned factories, the broken up parking lots, these huge cavernous factories where workers used to actually make a living. But what is not visible is the environmental mess that these companies, these capitalist corporations left behind. Horrendous mess. I know. I grew up in this crap. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio. And I know what was left behind. But the corporations leave for other countries and they leave these messes for the people to clean up or not. And this is after tax breaks and free utilities and all sorts of inducements to get them to locate into a community. And then they literally crap all over everything. And when it's time to go because they need more profit, they just get up and leave. And they move to Mexico, Vietnam, China, wherever. Look at the auto industry, especially the feeder industries for the auto industry. transmissions and differentials and all sorts of things necessary for the production of a car. How quickly they left. Major appliance industry, gone. You know, the washing machines, the dishwashers, the stoves and refrigerators, gone. And the people that work there, screw them. Capitalism says the most expendable object in their inventory is human labor. When they are finished with human labor, they flick it to the side and walk away. Not only did they flick the workers to the side, but they say to the community where they perched for decades in some cases, screw you, we're not cleaning up anything. Goodbye. We're going to China. Adios. How often does this have to happen? The oil industry. Just take a look. I mean, Americans don't have a clue as to what the oil industry has done globally because our media, bunch of two-bit whores, no offense to sex workers, who refuse to tell the truth. They will not tell the truth. The coal industry. How many times has the coal industry walked away after ripping the hell out of mountains, after gouging huge holes in the earth, polluting everything? People die. Mines collapse. The capitalist coal industry said, cost of doing business. And maybe you boys should have gone on to college, huh? Now you're stuck here. You got to work for us. Ha ha. They don't give a damn. Nuclear industry, don't even start. The nuclear industry that Barack Obama is now talking about, let's get it going again. Permits issued to two nuclear plants to open up, or nuclear reactors to open up here in Georgia. Nuclear industry. Their waste is indestructible. Capitalism always, always, I defy you to give me an example when it doesn't. It always leaves the people broken, sick, dead. Capitalism wants the oil in Iraq. Convince Americans to provide their young people to go die for freedom. Get all kinds of cute slogans and feed them to the right-wing media people. Freedom isn't free! You bastards. This is capitalism. And that's what we're witnessing. What's going on down in the Gulf? You know, BP, what are we in? Day 42, 56, 112. What difference does it make? They don't care. 11 people died on that rig. And this pig, Tony, whatever his name is, the CEO of BP. Well, I want to get this over. I want to get my life back. What about the 11 people who are not going to get their lives back, you unconscionable bastard? But that's what capitalism does. You can't blame old Tony. How can you blame Tony? Tony is a product of capitalism. Just like so many people in the United States, the teabagger types and the Glenn Beck suckers and the Rush Limbaugh. Oh yeah, I'm a capitalist. No, you're not. You're a sucker. You're an absolute sucker. God. But it never stops, does it? And I just get curious. In my lifetime, I have watched what arguably was, well, first of all, there were, I think when I was a kid growing up, there were 2.5 billion people on the earth. So, you know, this might not be a very good example, but, and I'm not that old. Okay. Maybe I am. I don't know. But when I was a kid growing up, the air was cleaner. It was, even though we had all the smokestacks, there weren't that many. The water was pure. It was being polluted, but hadn't gotten there yet. The rain wasn't acid yet. So in my lifetime, up to this point, capitalism has taken this country and absolutely pushed it to the brink of total destruction. Because what is this country except our people? You don't believe that? Well, that's cool. A lot of people put on uniforms and went and died, so you wouldn't have to believe that. Right? Right.
sent the jobs away.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Again, I find it intriguing that we have come this far in the development or the undevelopment of this country. Again, we stipulate, anytime I start on one of these tirades, I stipulate that the country was founded on genocide and racism, slavery. All three, actually. So, having stipulated that, then we can move on. The country was founded not on corporate or religious principles at all. As a matter of fact, the framers went out of their way to warn subsequent generations to stay away from both. To stay away from both, especially corporatism. How many people who claim to be a constitutionalist in this country, yet also love to dance around like marionettes on the end of a string for corporate America, how many of those people really understand what Jefferson, Madison, and moving beyond the framers, Lincoln, all the way up to Eisenhower, what these presidents, what these framers, what these people who had a vision about this country, what they had in mind, and they warned against this, against the powers of corporations. The average teabagger doesn't have a clue. Will not have a clue when you get right in the teabagger's face and explain it to him or her. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. They're blind, deaf, dumb. So, capitalism, corporatism, it's the same. They're interchangeable, aren't they? Has destroyed the country. The event in the Gulf of Mexico is one example. The invasion of Iraq is another. The invasion of Vietnam was another. The oil spills all over North America are another. The gutting of our cities in order for these filthy corporations, these filthy, disgusting capitalists to go make more profit is another example. It goes on and on. The pollution and destruction of mountains and streams and air and species, gone. Why? Do you go out and do it? Do you rip the top off a mountain? Do you piss in the water so that fish can't live? Do you throw your garbage? Well, maybe you do this. Do you throw your garbage all over the place? When you move out of your house to buy another one or to become homeless or whatever it is you're going to do, do you leave behind a radioactive or a toxic or a chemical mess for someone else to clean up? Do you do any of this? I damn sure don't, and I don't know anybody that does, but this is what corporate America, this is what the capitalists do every single second that they operate. No? You don't think so? You got a different point of view? I'll take your phone call until you display this gross ignorance that these right-wing half-wits display as soon as they open their mouths. So how long? I mean, what has to be destroyed before we get it? Who would have thought that the Gulf of Mexico was going to be destroyed by predatory capitalism? Who would have thought? Who would have thought 5 years ago, 10 years ago? I'm sure some of us knew that. I didn't. I thought, oh, God, well, roll the dice. All right, just pray it doesn't come up snake eyes. Just keep rolling the dice. Who would have thought? I watched some of the network news about Panama City Beach. I never went to Panama City Beach because it was too commercial, but I am familiar with that stretch of beach because it stretches all across the Florida Panhandle back to the east, and it's gorgeous, beautiful. And now it's going to be gone. Mississippi. Hey, lard ass Haley Barber, guess what's heading your way, fat boy? Alabama? Too bad. Louisiana? Well, we already know what's happened there. An absolute catastrophe. This is not a disaster. It's a catastrophe. This is going to exist, this destruction, either forever or for the next five, six, seven decades. Take your pick. You won't be here to see it cleaned up, and neither will I. We will be long dead and rotting before this is ever cleaned up. But this is what capitalism does. It happens in coastal Africa all the time. It happens in Southeast Asia all the time. But we don't care about that. We live over here. Well, here it is, kicking our ass, ruining everything for us. How does it feel? You know how it feels to me? It infuriates me. I wish there was somebody I could just beat to pieces for causing this. But, of course, there isn't anyone, is there? This is capitalism. It's concerned about one thing, capital. Now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change.
Gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. That's, again, that's always been, not always, the last 35 or 40 years when it became very clear to me. That this country was no more a representative democracy than it was a game of Parcheesi. And that capitalism, ultimately, because this is the nature, it's just the essence of capitalism, eventually would destroy city after city, region of the country after region of the country, life after life, family after family, until there was nothing left to speak of, left to destroy here in terms of the amount of profit predatory capitalism needs in order to justify its existence. And then it would start to spread. And it did spread. You know, the framers were not interested in capitalism. They were not interested in corporatism. They talked about small business, family farms, the romantic vision of a yeoman American, a guy who, or well, back then it was a guy, a male who would have a shop or a small business or be a farmer. Andre writes, so BP is still in control of cleanup? They effed up again, making things worse, apparently. This is what happens when you don't have a transparent government, something Obama vowed would happen in his administration. Instead, it has stayed the same or gotten worse in terms of secretiveness. Why has this company not been seized weeks ago by the, I don't know, Army, Navy, anyone in the Pentagon? And now Eric Holder makes a weak statement about, if laws were broken, we will punish to the full extent. And Obama says, I'll create new laws. Time is slipping away. And we're still in the warning the criminal as he's committing more. And we're still in the phase of warning the criminal as he's committing more crimes. Andre. See, just like the raid by the Israeli commandos on innocent civilians. Yes, they were innocent. trying to run a blockade to bring humanitarian aid to a people that the Israelis have decided to exterminate. And the United States doesn't know how to respond officially, not from the White House. Oh, you know, you have the people bought and paid for in the Congress and the Senate and the House. You know who they are. They're even Biden. They're all speaking about, well, Israel had a right to, all bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby. And poor Obama. Obama doesn't know what the hell to do. So he waffles. Where's the courage to say this sucks? This was awful. 9, 10 people dead. Dozens wounded. But corporate America and capitalism has determined this little nation state in the Middle East shall be protected by the United States of America under any circumstances. They can attack the USS Liberty and kill 37 U.S. sailors. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Capitalism, corporate America, makes its decisions, and if you don't go along with them, you will be stepped on. If you do go along with them, you will be stepped on. BC writes, Owens, Illinois is based in Toledo. They have a plant here in Pennsylvania, which they are shutting down July 1st. They haven't upgraded the plant to the tune of $24 million, which is now prohibitive. Instead of upgrading, they decided to pay the EPA fines and let the plant die. By paying the fines in lieu of compliance with EPA rules, they have for years polluted the surrounding area. Now they'll pack up and go who knows where. We know it won't be here. Signed, Clinging in northwestern PA. Of course. Of course. And I don't understand how people, Americans, can be blind to this. How does this happen? How does this happen that we are so blind to what capitalism has never benefited us? If you think it has, send me an email. Don't load it up with your filthy insults. Just send me an email and tell me how capitalism has benefited, ultimately, the United States. I'm not talking about your job that you had for 35 years before you managed to squeak out under the wire and retire. When you factor in the amount of time your life you spent working for some filthy corporation, and what did you get out of it?
Oh, I put my kids through college, Mike. I got a house.
Really? Is that the only way that could have happened? And what is the end result of it? Are your children going to have jobs? How about your grandchildren? Are they going to be able to breathe? Are they going to be able to go to the beaches in Mississippi or Alabama or Florida and eventually Texas? In China, capitalism strikes again. Apple is closely monitoring the situation at a massive Foxconn factory complex in China where 10 workers have committed suicide so far this year. Steve Jobs, Apple CEO, speaking at a tech conference in California yesterday, called the deaths, quote, very troubling and said, quote, we are on top of this, end quote. Apple iPhones and iPads are among the high-tech gadgets assembled at the plant in the Chinese city of Shenzhen, which has seen at least 13 workers try to commit suicide this year, with 10 succeeding. Foxconn is part of Taiwan-based Honghai, the largest electronics manufacturer in the world. It's pledged to increase counseling and ramp up other safety measures, including safety nets around its tall dormitories. Son of a bitch. Safety nets. So when people jump, they get caught in a net. Ah. Steve Jobs said, we look at everything at these companies. Foxconn is not a sweatshop. End quote. Foxconn employs some, you ready for this? 300,000 workers at this plant. The people who work there work, eat, sleep, shop, and do their recreation within the walled-in facility. You know how much they make? $3,600 a year. Of course, the annual Chinese gross domestic product per capita is $3,600 a year. Hewlett-Packard, back here in the United States. Ah, Hewlett-Packard decides yesterday it's going to slash thousands of jobs and thus underscored the continuing jobs crisis here in the United States of corporate America. Hewlett will cut 9,000 jobs from its customer service sector and plans to spend up to $1 billion to increase automation of those services in order to remain competitive with IBM. Got to remain competitive with IBM. You're a worker. You work for Hewlett. Too bad. This is the latest wave of job cuts at Hewlett-Packard since the new capitalist took over in 2005, Mark Hurd. Since assuming that post, Hurd has announced plans to eliminate more than 48,000 jobs. He claims his company can't afford these workers. But you know how much he makes? Mr. Hurd's total pay in 2009 alone was $24 million for 1 year. And capitalism benefits you? Tell that to the workers at Hewlett-Packard. The thousands of workers laid off from Hewlett-Packard and other companies will now face greater difficulty in keeping their heads above water thanks to cuts in unemployment benefits passed by the House of Representatives on Friday. They get you this way, and then they get you that way. Corporate America owns the legislature in this country. So, corporate America, the capitalists say, we're not making enough profit, so we're going to fire 50,000 people. Got to make money. Our CEO has to make his $24 million a year. We got to make money, damn it, or we'll go out of business. So we're going to cut 48,000 jobs. Meanwhile, the Congress gets its marching orders from corporate America and says, sorry, boys, no more unemployment benefits. Some emergency unemployment benefits will extend through November, but essential programs aimed at relieving the financial burden on unemployed workers are gone. In preparing the bill for a vote, the House refused to extend subsidies for COBRA, federal plan that assists newly unemployed workers in retaining their health insurance. No worker laid off after May 31st, when was that, Monday, will now be eligible for assistance with COBRA insurance payments. Without these subsidies, many of these workers are going to lose their health insurance because they can't afford to pay the premiums. Oh, the House bill also cuts $24 billion in federal subsidies to state Medicaid programs. That's a decision that's going to have a devastating impact on the ability of low-income families to get any kind of health care. You see how capitalism works? Nice, huh?
Factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago. And I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any.
Inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
The capitalists don't care whether it is a factory, a toxic waste site that they created, or an explosion in the Gulf that continues to dump millions of cubic feet of gas and oil into the Gulf of Mexico. It doesn't matter. They will take their time. If there was any way that Tony Hayward and BP could walk away from this, they would do it in a heartbeat. They walk away from the same kind of destruction in Nigeria or in Niger. They walk away from this kind of destruction the oil industry does in Ecuador. they walk away from this kind of destruction in Alaska. It's just, you know, somebody else to clean it up. Capitalism doesn't clean things up. So the cuts to unemployment, the cuts to COBRA, the cuts to Medicaid for workers who have been thrown out on their asses. This recession, first of all, it's created. It doesn't involve supply and demand. It doesn't involve the invisible hand of the marketplace. What it involves is a screaming desire for more profit, as much as it can get for capitalism. And the Congress is gutless. It's run by a bunch of pale-skinned bastards who couldn't care less about workers, because they are bought and paid for, the Congress, by corporate America, by the capitalist system. They are going to be okay. So the cuts in unemployment come at a time when there's no halt to joblessness. Layoffs continue to mount. Millions of workers finding themselves in need of assistance. They're not going to find it. The official unemployment rate in the U.S. as a whole stands at 9.9%. There's some 27 million people unemployed or underemployed. Bureau of Labor Statistics issued a recent report and found that employers took 1,856 mass layoff actions in April that resulted in the separation of 200,870 workers. So rather than expanding benefits available to workers, no. Congress is imposing what they call austerity measures, because, you know, our spending is getting out of control. The bill cuts significantly the funds that would assist unemployed workers in obtaining access to health care. But you know what? It's real generous in providing tax breaks to big business. This bill that cuts benefits to workers, to common people, sets aside $28 billion in subsidies and tax breaks for corporations and other special interest groups. Workers won't receive COBRA benefits, but guess what? NASCAR racetrack owners stand to receive nearly $40 million in tax write-offs. Now, tell me, you right-wing thug, does that sound good to you? Of course it does, because you're a moron. $40 million in tax write-offs to NASCAR racetrack owners. $28 billion in subsidies and tax breaks for corporations. What do the workers get? A kick in the ass. Now, the House of Representatives passed the bill on Friday, saying, no, sorry, workers. The Senate, though, left for a week-long vacation without taking any action. And this is the second time the U.S. Congress has left unemployed workers in the lurch. Now, because the Senate took no action on the House bill that voted to extend these emergency unemployment compensation program funding, the program will expire this week, leaving hundreds of thousands of unemployed workers who have run out of funds and were waiting transfer to the next tier of unemployment comp with no income until the Senate returns from its vacation and votes on the bill. And by the way, as of the 2008 elections, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, there were 238 millionaires in Congress. Now remember, there are 535 members in the House and the Senate. Almost half of them are millionaires. More than 44% of the total members of Congress are millionaires. U.S. senators serving in 2008 had a median income. U.S. senators had a median income, not average, median, of $1.79 million. And these rat bastards in the House have decided, and the Senate, to once again say to the American worker, go to hell. Go to hell. We don't care about you. And why should they? They're owned by capitalist corporate America. So I think about this stuff sometimes, and I just think to myself, what will it take? What will Three Mile Island didn't convince anybody of anything that, so no new building permits for nuclear reactors were granted after Three Mile Island, but everybody warned that Three Mile Island would happen. It happened. Everybody warned, not everybody, but people who understand that capitalism is the death knell for this country, warned about what would happen in the Gulf of Mexico. What's it going to take? What the hell has to happen? Seriously, what has to happen before people in this country wake up to the fact that the system under which we operate now, which is approaching in indentured servitude, that the system under which we operate is killing us. It's killing us. It's killing our society. It's killing our children and grandchildren. What's it going to take? I'm just curious. What is it going to take before we realize how filthy corporatism is? What's it going to take? I don't know. We'll be back. Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. We are here to make you feel good about yourself. In that light, according to Bloomberg, Bloomberg.com, the business website, right? Bloomberg.com. BP's failure since April to plug this gusher has prompted forecasts that the crude may continue gushing into December. December. BP's attempts so far to cap the well and plug the leak on the seabed a mile below the surface haven't worked. The start of the Atlantic hurricane season this week indicates storms in the Gulf may disrupt other efforts. The head of research and energy at an investment company said, quote, the worst case scenario is Christmas time. And then this freak adds, this process is teaching us to be skeptical of deadlines. Skeptical of deadlines? See, this is that's a classic capitalist statement. This process is teaching us to be skeptical of deadlines. Not skeptical of capitalism or oil drilling in the bottom of the ocean with no idea what to do when it all goes wrong. No, not that. We're to be skeptical of deadlines. Ending the year with a still gushing well would mean about 4 million barrels of oil spilled into the Gulf based on the government's current estimate of 12,000 to 19,000 barrels leaking a day. Well, we know it's 10 times that, so call it 40 million barrels of oil into the Gulf. by the end of the year. According to a professor of coastal studies at Louisiana State, quote, that would, or not a quote, that would wipe out marine life deep at sea and elsewhere in the, near the leak and elsewhere in the Gulf and along hundreds of miles of coastline. Wipe out marine life. It gets better. It gets worse. So much crude pouring to the ocean may alter the chemistry of the sea with unforeseeable results, said Mark Saito, an associate scientist at Woodhull's Oceanographic Institute in Massachusetts. BP says it can't guarantee the success of its attempt now underway to capture the flow of oil and divert it to a ship at the surface. Thad Allen, our national commander for the incident, said operations may need to be suspended to allow for an evacuation ahead of a tropical storm or hurricane, during which oil would continue to gush into the Gulf of Mexico. The so-called relief well being drilled to intercept and plug the damaged well by mid-August might miss, as other emergency wells have done before, requiring more time to make a second, third, or fourth try. That's according to Dave Resnick, president-elect of the American Association of Petroleum Geologists. And a spokesman for BP, Robert Wine, well, he declined to detail the company's own worst-case scenario. The ultimate worst-case scenario? Are you ready? Sit down. This is according to Fred Amenzada, a research professor at the University of Southern California Center for Integrated Smart Oil Fields. How's that for a title? He says the ultimate worst-case scenario is that the well is never successfully plugged. And Fred used to work for Unocal. He said that would leave the well to flow for probably more than a decade. A decade. That's the worst-case scenario. More likely, he said, the relief wells will eventually succeed, eventually, though it may take longer than the 3 months predicted by BP. It took Mexico state-owned oil company Petróleos Mexicanos, or Pemex, 9 months to plug its Ixtoc 1 well after an explosion and fire in 1979. 9 months. The company's first attempt, where the relief well failed, so it had to drill a second. Eventually, more than 140 million gallons of crude spilled into the Gulf of Mexico, the biggest offshore oil spill on record. No, it didn't go north. No, it didn't get into the loop current. And yes, it has destroyed those coastal areas of Mexico where it finally came ashore. Ocean biologists are concerned the oil could linger in deep layers in the sea, generating oxygen-depleted dead zones that kill all marine life. Plumes of oil spinning off of the spill have been detected in two directions, and researchers suspect there are more. Of course, BP says, no, whoa, what are you talking about? Wait a minute. What are you talking about? The Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute dude said, quote, clearly oxygen levels are going to be decreased in the vicinity of the plume area, and it looks like it could be a very large plume area. End quote. The crude oil could enter a current that would draw it out of the Gulf and up along the East Coast, all the way to Nantucket, according to the Louisiana State University expert. The American Bird Conservancy has identified 10 key regions on the Gulf Coast where birds will be harmed. If the oil is spread widely by a hurricane, there could be long-term damage to bird populations. A spokesman for the organization said, quote, what is difficult to measure is the loss of future generations of birds when birds fail to lay eggs and when eggs fail to hatch, end quote. Marine life may take decades to recover, wiping out businesses along the coastline that depends on the fishing and seafood industry. Well, yeah, that's already dead. Decades. Are you listening? You capitalist lovers, decades, decades to recover. Well, you know, that's the risk. I mean, you know, we're trying to provide what what everybody wants, aren't we? You know, lots of energy, lots of cheap energy, and there's nothing cheaper than punching holes and sucking up oil that was laid down millions of years ago. Of course, the Christians will tell you it was all laid down not more than 7,000 years ago. At CNN's website, it is now saying that BP has abandoned the diamond saw idea. Ain't gonna saw. What's next? What's next? Oh, by the way, BP, struggling to maintain its image. Hey, we're capitalists, we're corporatists, we have to maintain our image, so we are going to hire someone to help us out. Someone to head our American public relations operation. We've decided to hire Ann Womack Colton. Yes, absolutely. She begins today. The BP press office tells TPM.com. In the private sector, she worked for the Brunswick Group and APCO Worldwide. In announcing the hire, BP only mentioned that she was the director of public affairs for the Department of Energy under President George W. Bush. Oh, by the way, there's one other thing that this woman did. She was the campaign press secretary for Vice President Dick Cheney. There you go. Cheney's everywhere. His filthy, bony death fingers are everywhere. Halliburton, partly to blame for this, the cause of it. And now this strange woman, Womack Colton, she's also been a director of public affairs for the U.S. Treasury and a senior advisor to an SEC chair, according to the DOE press release. Oh, and she was the Washington liaison for Senator John Cornyn when he was the Texas Attorney General. Ah, a BP spokesman says that Womack Colton is, quote, the best person for the job based on her wealth of experience, end quote. Wealth of experience. She ran the press office for Dick Cheney. In other words, the woman has devoted her life to lying, to distorting, to confusing, to lying.
One little problem that confronts you, got a monkey on your back, just one more fix, love.
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
21 past the hour. Was it earlier this week I said I was ready to kick Glenn Beck's ass, calling him out because of the nasty comments he made about Malia Obama, 11-year-old child? I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything. Have you heard anything? Surely the little weasels that run these right-wing websites have notified Glenn that he's been challenged. Not a peep. Cowardly son of a bitch. Oh, excuse me. I'm not supposed to say that word. I'm sorry. One would think that Obama's hands-off approach to the oil disaster would please some of these teabaggers like Piyush Jindal, of the governor of Louisiana, who berated Obama for spending too much money on social programs during the recession, or Steve Scalise, Republican of the representative of Louisiana, who famously warned of a, quote, government-run global warming Gestapo that would be created if national clean energy standards were adopted. You like these guys? These guys are lower than street whores. No offense to real sex workers. Now, both these hypocrites are practically on their knees begging Obama to spend money, take over from BP. But the biggest hypocrite and flip-flop queen of the decade is none other than teabagger darling Batty Michelle Bachmann, who you will remember just a few weeks ago called Obama a gangster for taking over health care and seeking too much government regulation of the private sector. Remember that? The same Michelle Bachmann who sees virtually every government program except the ones that keep her husband's scammy little health clinic going or the ones that pay her salary as some kind of forced socialism. Now she's berating Obama for not involving the federal government in the current oil disaster. That's right. She's upset because Obama's government isn't passing enough regulations and because he's not taking over a private sector corporate entity. Hurry! Check and see if the earth is still spinning on its axis. This is why I hate these filthy pig conservative Republicans. They are so hypocritical. They are such snakes. They are so stupid. And they get voted into office. Huh? She actually chastised the president for not seizing ships. That's right. For being too hands-off when he should have ordered the Coast Guard to commandeer other people's boats. Does her pimp, Glenn Beck, know about this? Michelle Bachmann wants Obama to seize private property for government use. Glenn Beck! One of your streetwalkers has wandered way off the reservation, Glenn! Glenn! Michelle Bachmann! Oh, never mind. Glenn's the hypocrite who criticized the journalists for invading the privacy of Sarah Palin's kid, and then 2 days later went on a 20-minute screed mocking 11-year-old Malia Obama. Glenn, one of your whores is loose! We got time to play this clip? Play it.
We haven't seen competence in the government's hands-off policy with this disaster. And we need to ask the question, on day one, what did the Obama administration do about the Coast Guard?
Oh!
What did they ask the Coast Guard to do to intervene on day one?
Intervene?
They weren't there. What did the administration do on day one with the booms that could have been put out in the ocean in order to quarantine off, if you will, this oil as it surged to the surface?
Oh, no!
Nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
The administration, they were hands off. They didn't do anything.
That's what you
want. Where were the boats that could have been commandeered by the government?
You crazy bitch!
To be sent into this region to deal with that oil plume as it was coming up to the water.
I'm sorry.
And destroying marine life. Nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
The administration was hands off on this policy.
But Michelle, you batty crazy broad, what are you talking about? This is what you've been screaming about. Oh, the government's got to stay out of the way. Look what they're doing to health care. Look what they're doing with their regulations. They're insane. I shouldn't call her a crazy bitch. She's just insane. She's out of her mind. She's a typical Republican, a typical conservative, a typical bought and paid for corporate whore who works in the legislative branch of the government of the United States to make sure that corporate America takes over the entire thing. You better say something. I'm getting carried away.
I just want to know, you know, I just wanted to look at the camera on the floor on C-SPAN and go, how do you like me now? You know, to all her teabagger minions when she's saying, you know, why didn't Obama commandeer private ships? Why didn't he send in the Coast Guard with the booms and take ships and just take people's ships and use them for the government use? Why didn't he do that from day one? He was hands off. I'm thinking, isn't that what you wanted? Didn't you always say you wanted less government intervention in private affairs?
Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these miserable bastards? Haven't? I hate them. I hate them. Glenn, come on, be a good pimp. One of your workers is wandering down a side street. Come on, Glenn. Crack the whip, boy.
She was tough on the money, so you better treat her right. She was tough on the money. So hard for it, honey. She was tough on the money, so you better treat her right. I met her there in corner dance, but she wonders where she is. And thanks to her,
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
I guess you know this by now, the Justice Department under Eric Holder, who defended, was it Coca-Cola, against murder charges in South America. Good old Eric Holder, another corporatist who is going to do the devil's work now and pretend that he is conducting a criminal investigation into the events that led to the oil gush. Holder told a news conference in New Orleans, according to a text of his remarks, quote, "The first and foremost goal of the entire government is stopping the leak." No, it's not. I mean, who is he saying that to? Who believes that? If it were, the government of the United States would put BP into receivership. Not necessarily, you know, Robert Reich, was it Robert Reich, former labor secretary under Clinton, said this today on, he was on CNN. Somebody on CNN, some substitute, I don't know where the regular person is, but the substitute talking head was the dumbest bastard I've ever seen on CNN. And that's really, he was even stupider than, what's his name? Robert Reich is explaining what receivership is to this guy. And this guy would say, well, that sounds like something that would happen in Venezuela. Seize a company? It was just astonishing. Maybe you saw that. First and foremost goal, the entire government is stopping the leak. That's a lie, Eric, and you know it. The first and foremost goal of the entire government is stopping the leak. And he stands there and says that. Huh? Hi, I'm Eric Holder. Hey, I'm an attorney general. He goes on to say, stopping the leak, containing and cleaning up the oil. Eric, you're not going to live long enough. None of us will. Nobody alive today in the United States, probably up to and including the little kids, like my daughter, who's five, are going to live long enough to see this cleaned up. In other words, gotten rid of. In other words, this huge system of estuaries in the southern United States coastal area back to normal. You won't see it, Eric. Neither will I. Neither will my children. Neither will yours. Maybe mine. Holder went on to say, quote, but as we have said all along, we must also ensure that anyone found responsible for this spill is held accountable. That means enforcing the appropriate civil and, if warranted, criminal authorities to the full extent of the law. Really? If there's any crimes found, if... Mr. Holder, I know you don't listen to this program, but let me play something for you. You got that thing from Lisa Myers on NBC. I want you to hear this. This is off the NBC News tonight. A reporter, correspondent Lisa Myers, interviewed a woman named Shelley Anderson. She was the wife of Jason Anderson, who was one of the 11 killed in the Deepwater Horizon explosion on April 20th. Her husband, Jason, often told Shelley that Transocean, which is the entity he worked for, would take care of the family if anything happened to him. But now, what's the company trying to do now? You'll find out in a second. Shelley spoke with NBC's Lisa Myers about his safety concerns just prior to the incident.
Shelley Anderson says the last time her husband Jason was home, he seemed unusually driven to get his affairs in order before returning for his final week on the Deepwater Horizon.
Everything seemed to be pressing to Jason about getting things in order in case something happened, teaching me how to do certain things on the motorhome so that I could go and do things with the kids and make sure that I knew how to do everything.
She says Jason, who was 35, drew up a will.
And one day Jesus came over for a visit
and went over what he wanted his daughter Lacey and his son River to have and to learn how to do.
On the way to the airport, he asked if something were to happen, Would you and the kids stay here at the house?
And what do you think in retrospect he was doing?
He was taking care of me. He was taking care of me. He was taking care of Lacey. He was taking care of River. To make sure that we were okay.
Shelley says during his last few calls from the rig, he was clearly worried.
I can remember him saying things, you know, like, well, something's going on, but I can't talk about it right now. The walls are too thin. I'll tell you about it when I get home.
Jason Anderson's father told us that Jason had expressed concern that BP kept wanting to stray from procedures to finish the well faster, which Jason considered unsafe.
Jason had just been promoted to a new job off the rig and was packed to leave when everything went horribly wrong. Shelley says others there that night told her Jason died trying to bring the rig under control.
They hug my neck and tell me how wonderful Jason is, what a hero he is, and that he saved 115 lives. That's what they're telling me.
She says her husband often told her that if anything happened to him, Transocean would take care of the family. Yet soon after the accident, Transocean went to court to try to limit its overall liability, which is now before a judge.
They sat right here in this kitchen and told me that they would take care of us. I want to know how they're going to do that.
Do you feel that Transocean has lived up to its promises to you?
They're trying to limit the price of my husband's life, is what they're doing.
Transocean says it's committed to working with Shelley and other families to arrive at a just resolution as soon as possible. In the meantime, Shelley hopes that amid all the concern over the oil spill, no one forgets that 11 men are gone forever. Lisa Myers, NBC News, Midfield, Texas.
So Transocean has gone to court to limit its liability to the families of the dead workers. Of course, this is a surprise to Shelley Anderson, who is obviously devastated. And if you watched NBC News tonight and saw the two little kids that Transocean and BP decided did not need a father, then you would understand why, among other reasons, Shelley Anderson sat there and cried on camera. But Transocean or BP or Halliburton or whoever these filthy corporations are don't care. What they care about is limiting their liability, because this is capitalism, a gentle listener. This has nothing to do with taking care of a family. Are you serious? How about the miners up in West Virginia? Have they been taken care of? What about the oil workers that died in Texas at the BP plant when it exploded? Have they been taken care of? What about all the families in Niger who have watched their, you know what the life expectancy is now in that country because of BP and Royal Dutch Shell and the rest of these oil? The life expectancy in that country has fallen to 40 years. Do you know why? Because of the toxicity of everything the people in that country come into contact with. We don't care about that. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that. La 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 la. Don't want to hear it. Don't want to hear it. But when it hits us, when it hits in our Gulf of Mexico, what do these filthy capitalist organizations do? They run into the courts. And the courts will usually accommodate them. It's not just the legislative and executive branch. Is also the judicial branch. Have you noticed? The Supreme Court declared that corporations have the same rights in influence in an election as you do. The big difference is they have a hell of a lot more money than you do, truth seeker. So if the legislative and executive and judicial branches of government are owned subsidiaries of capitalist corporate America, where does that leave you and me? Where does that leave Shelley Anderson and her two kids? nowhere. And yet this filthy punk Glenn Beck and the rest of these filthy, filthy punks on radio and television want to tell you that we're drifting into socialism. Oh, my God. And the bagger freaks listen to this and they go, yup, 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 that's right. Yup, 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 got to take our country back. Yup, 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 get out of the hands of the Negro. Yup, yup, yup. You stupid right-wing idiots. Yes, stupid fools.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirts? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
Mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malone.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
Ten before the hour, Faith the Atheist writes in, I think it really is as basic as who is good and who is bad. The Gulf catastrophe separates us. There is no defending what has happened. There is no defending of continued drilling. There is no defending of the federal government's and Obama's response. There is no defending of the corporate media's reluctance to face the truth. I can't think of any other event except Katrina that has affected me this way. The times, yeah, they have a changed Faith the Atheist. Jeff writes, Mike, I've never felt so angered and frustrated by what has transpired over the past few weeks. With it being a combination of the oil spill, Christian paranoia about gays in the military, and the continuation of our military ghost chase in the Middle East. Every time I see one of those corporate empty suits, the pre-programmed news analysts, conservative prostitutes, or libertarian S&M slaves to capitalism, I just want to hurl something at the TV. But what frustrates me even more are the people I encounter locally who follow these corporate right-wing nut jobs as if they are a beacon of hope, even more so as I am knee-deep in one of the reddest states in America. Whether it would be those who think Fox News is great, business people in the Gulf Coast who think the oil is never going to hit the shore, students in my microeconomics class who think John Sophocleous, former Libertarian candidate for Alabama governor, is a great professor, or people who keep giving me that damn bootstraps quote. I just want to quote Jim Morrison's drunken rant at the infamous Miami concert in 1969. You're all a bunch of effing idiots! Letting people tell you what you're going to do, letting people push you around. How long do you think it's going to last? How long are you going to let it go on? How long are you going to let them push you around? Maybe you love it. Maybe you like being pushed around. Maybe you love getting your face stuck in the blank. You're all a bunch of slaves, letting everybody push you around. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? Anyway, just figured I'd vent that out. Jeff. Well, there's another way to put it, too. That was Jim Morrison. How about Cicero? Marcus Tullius Cicero. And this is courtesy Greg in Marin County. Quote, a nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he's known and carries his banner openly. but the traitor moves amongst those within the gates freely. His sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself, for the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The traitor is the plague. Cicero, thanks to Greg and Marin. Now, doesn't that remind you of Beck and Bachman and Palin and Limbaugh and Savage and the rest of these disgusting, filthy traitors? The traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so that it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The traitor is the plague. And this was originally published at Interpress Service website. And oil, as oil continues gushing in the Gulf of Mexico, no sign of stopping. Scientists, environmentalists and local residents are beginning to reckon with the reality of a massive annihilation of sea creatures and wildlife. Dead animals are already washing up on shores. Birds have been found dying in pools of oil and dispersant, which have taken over their marshland habitats. Several species in the Gulf of Mexico are already endangered, including the Kemp's Ridley and Leatherback sea turtles, the sperm whale, and birds such as the piping plover and the Gulf sturgeon. As a result of the disaster, the Center for Biological Diversity has already petitioned the U.S. EPA to add the bluefin tuna to the endangered species list. Assistant Professor Michael Blum of Tulane University's Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology warns that some species may be at risk of extinction. There are hundreds of shorebirds and marine mammals that are acutely sensitive to oil. You could potentially lose whole species, have extinction events. Brown pelicans were just taken off the endangered species list. On this threshold, a big dieback and mortality event, they would be pushed back into a situation where they could be extinct. A lot of the species of most concern, sea turtles and dolphins, migrate, use our breeding grounds, or their very important feeding ground. They're saying it really not clear. It's a safe thing to say. As a scientist, one doesn't want to overreach and reach erroneous conclusions, Blum said. However, he added, quote, from a real-world perspective, going down, seeing what's happening, and understanding the ecology of system, we're facing immediate effects of this exposure, end quote. Stay with us. We'll be back. Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. It's always 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. First, eyewitness accounts of the raid contradict a version put out by Israeli officials. This is from The Guardian of the UK. Survivors of the Israeli assault on a flotilla carrying relief supplies to Gaza returned to Greece and Turkey today, giving the first eyewitness accounts of the raid, in which at least 10 people died. Arriving at Istanbul's Atatürk Airport with her one-year-old baby, Turkish activist Nilüfer Çetin said Israeli troops opened fire before boarding the Turkish-flagged ferry Mavi Marmara, which was the scene of the worst clashes and all the fatalities. Israeli officials have said the use of armed force began when its boarding party was attacked. Well, of course the Israeli government will lie. You're talking about Benjamin Netanyahu. The mother, whose husband is the boat's chief engineer, said, quote, "It was extremely bad and very tough clashes took place. The Mavi Marmara is filled with blood." She told reporters that she and her child hid in the bathroom of their cabin during the confrontation. She said, quote, "The operation started immediately with firing. First it was warning shots. But when the Mavi Marmara wouldn't stop, these warnings turned into an attack." She goes on, "There were sound and smoke bombs, and later they used gas bombs. Following the bombings, they started to come on board from helicopters," end quote. She's among a handful of Turkish activists to be released. More than 300 remain in Israeli custody. That was yesterday. I think most have been released at this point. She said she agreed to extradition from Israel after she was warned the conditions in jail would be too harsh for her child. She went on, quote, "I'm one of the first passengers to be sent home because I have a baby. When we arrived at the Israeli port of Ashdod, we were met by the Israeli Interior and Foreign Ministry officials and police. There were no soldiers. They asked me only a few questions, but they took everything. Cameras, laptops, cell phones, personal belongings, including our clothes," end quote. Kutlu Tiryaki was a captain of another vessel in the flotilla. He said, quote, "We continuously told them we did not have weapons. We came here to bring humanitarian aid and not to fight." The attack on the Mavi Marmara came in an instant. They attacked it with 12 or 13 attack boats and also with commandos from helicopters. We heard the gunshots over our portable radio handsets, which we used to communicate with the Mavi Marmara because our ship communication system was disrupted. There were 3 or 4 helicopters also used in the attack. We were told by Mavi Marmara their crew and civilians were being shot at and windows and doors were being broken by the Israelis," end quote. 6 Greek activists who returned to Athens accused Israeli commandos of using electric shocks during the raid. Dimitris Giallalis, who had been aboard the Svendoni, one of the boats in the flotilla, told reporters, quote, "Suddenly from everywhere we saw inflatables coming at us, and within seconds, fully equipped commandos came up on the boat. They came up and used plastic bullets. We had beatings. We had electric shocks. Any method we can think of, they used," end quote. Michalis Gigoropoulos, who was at the wheel of the Free Mediterranean, another boat, said, quote, "We were in international waters. The Israelis acted like pirates, completely out of the normal way that they conduct nautical exercises, and seized our ship. They took us hostage, pointing guns at our heads. They descended from helicopters and fired tear gas and bullets. There was absolutely nothing we could do. Those who tried to resist, forming a human ring on the bridge, were given electric shocks." Grigoropoulos, who insisted the ship was full of humanitarian aid bound for Gaza and nothing more, said that once detained, the human rights activists on board were not allowed to contact a lawyer or the Greek embassy in Tel Aviv. Quote, "They didn't let us go to the toilet, eat or drink water, and throughout they videotaped us. They videoed us. They confiscated everything, mobile phones, laptops, cameras, and personal effects. They only allowed us to keep our papers," end quote. And then I got this. This is from Stuart. "Dear Mike, I love listening to your show. keeps me company on my way home from work. Your passion and vitriol, especially about the Bush-Cheney crime family, is commensurate with mine. So I pretty much agree with about 99% of what you say. The other 1%, when you talk about Israel and the, quote, situation, end quote, in the Middle East, I couldn't disagree with you more vehemently. Yes, I am Jewish, but that doesn't automatically dismiss me as a biased observer. I try to keep all things in perspective. Moderation in all things is my motto. But it irks me beyond anything that you, along with many, many other liberals, either, one, buy into the Arab propaganda machine. It's just like the talking heads that you always rant about, i.e. Druggy Limbaugh, Parrot Boy Hannity, and Suicide Boy Beck. Or two, you're a wear-your-heart-on-your-sleeve liberal who confuses the, quote, poor homeless Palestinians, end quote, whose land was usurped by, quote, the imperialist Israelis, end quote, with Native Americans, whose land was stripped from them by white European settlers. I don't know which one it is, but if either one of them is you, you're wrong. In fact, the first sentence from Mike's daily blog, you say, quote, analysis of the Gaza incident and the media coverage of the event. Are we getting the entire story from the media, end quote? The media couldn't be further from the truth, Mike. They buy the whole Arab story, hook, line, and sinker. What the hell is this guy talking about, Kathy? What media does this Stewart listen to? Not the American media. He goes on. Western media is totally worthless nowadays. You know this for a fact, by the way, they report on any of the important domestic issues of the day. If you would so kindly go to, and then he gives me a website, and not dismiss it because it's a Jewish Federation website, you'll read that Israel has been trying to negotiate with these people for several weeks to follow Israel's wishes and let them inspect the cargo. Israel even said that the mission's organizers could accompany the shipment overland to Gaza after the inspection, and that Israel would then ensure that the people's mission or the mission's people would be allowed to return from Israel to their place of origin. Israel regularly lets humanitarian supplies go through as we speak. Israeli doctors even tend to sick Palestinians. The situation is not black and white, Mike. What kind of humanitarian mission was it anyway, if there were a number of folks on the Mavi Marmara ready for a fight, huh? And if you think that Israel doesn't have a right to blockade Gaza, think again. They are at war. Hamas fires rockets at Israel almost every day. Is it okay for them to do that? Because usually, quote, they don't hit anything or kill anyone, end quote. Remember, there's never been a peace treaty in 60-some-odd years since the formation of the modern state. So it's not like any of the land issues have been settled. You want to argue about the Jewish West Bank settlers? I'll grant you that. Those people don't help the situation any by building more settlements. And when they shoot West Bank Arabs, they should be prosecuted, etc. So therefore, I would truly like to see more even-handedness in your reporting on Israel. It would show the same objectivity that you show to everything else you report on. Thanks, Stewart, and his last name. Wow. Stewart, I don't know how to begin to respond to your email, so I'm not going to. I'm going to read it on the air, which I just did, and let it stand. I have a partial list of the terrorists who were on board these ships. It's thanks to Reg over at TVNewsLies.org. It is a breakdown of the nationalities in the flotilla, and I'll share that with you as soon as we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
They say, repent,
repent,
repent.
I wanna
stop Mexico. Mexico.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, let me, thanks to Reg, I will give you the nationalities of the terrorists, the dangerous terrorists on board that flotilla. From Australia, 3. From Azerbaijan, 2. From Italy, 6. From Indonesia, 12. From Ireland, 9. Algeria, 28. From the United States, 11. Bulgaria, 2. From Bosnia, 1. From Bahrain, 4. From Belgium, 5. Germany, 11. South Africa, 1. From Holland, 2. The United Kingdom, 31. From Greece, 38. Jordan, 30. Kuwait, 15. Lebanon, 3. Mauritania, 3. Malaysia, 11. From Egypt, 3. Macedonia, 3. Morocco, 7. Norway, 3. New Zealand, 1. Syria, 3. Serbia, 1. Oman, 1. From Pakistan, 3. Czech Republic, 4. From France, 9. Kosovo, 1. Canada, 1. Sweden, 11. Turkey, 380. Yemen, 4. Certainly an international group, wouldn't you say? But they're all terrorists, and they all hate the Jews, and they will all do anything to kick Israel into the ocean. That is what we are supposed to believe. If you listen to members of the United States Senate, members of the United States House of Representatives, the Vice President of the United States, all media in this country, and every Israeli-supporting, Likud-loving organization in the United States. They're all terrorists! I wonder why this list, Reg, didn't include some of the Israelis. Weren't there 5 or 6 Israelis on here? By the way, off the topic, most of the time, Mike's blog, well, all the time, is written by Kathy. I keep telling her to sign her name to it. If you go to my website and read it, it's Kathy's writing, not mine. I haven't written a blog up there in months. And there's a number of reasons, but Kathy's blog also goes to Huffington Post. So if you would, you can read our website, but go to Huffington Post and read it there, because that what does that do? It moves it up in there, and there it does something positive for the program. So you can read our website. It really doesn't matter at our website, but go to Huffington Post and type in, what is it, Mike Malloy Show or Kathy Malloy? What is it? Mike Malloy Show. And you'll find Kathy's blog there every day. But, you know, I get a lot of people that write to me and say, well, what you said in your blog today, blah, 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 blah. It's not me. It's Kathy. You've got to start. I put your name on it today. What'd you do, take it off when I edit it for you? It's still there. Okay. Joe Biden publicly defended Israel's actions, saying that Israel, quote, has a right to know, end quote, if arms were smuggled. Israel has a right to know. Weapons of mass destruction. Let's go to war. Let's invade a country and kill people. Let's assault the earth in Iraq with depleted uranium. Let's sacrifice 4,000 of our own young men and young women because Saddam Hussein has hidden weapons. move the video forward. Stop there.
Okay.
We have to invade this flotilla of relief vessels because there are weapons on board these relief vessels. There are all sorts of weapons that Hamas will use to attack and kill Israel. We must invade. We must land. We must kill people and wound people because there are weapons there. Joe Biden on PBS's Charlie Rose show earlier this evening said, quote, Israel has an absolute right to deal with its security interest, end quote. Biden defended Israel's actions in boarding the Gaza flotilla as, quote, legitimate, end quote. After suggesting the flotilla's cargo of aid could have been unloaded elsewhere, Biden appears to brush off the international criticism, asking, so what's the big deal here? What's the big deal of insisting it go straight to Gaza? He then makes it clear that Washington is happy for Israel to conduct its own investigation of the incident that led to 9 deaths and dozens of injuries, although Biden added, but we're open to international participation.
I'm Jim Cook.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, and I want to share this email with you. This is from Kathleen O'Connor Wong, and she is from California. She's a FreeGaza.org volunteer. Well, let me just read to you what she wrote to me. Dear Mike, was heading down to Laguna when your program started. Was so grateful you were talking about the massacre against the flotilla to Gaza. August 23, 2008, I was aboard one of two converter fishing boats with 43 passengers that went to Gaza from Cyprus. I and many of us are over 50, many of us women. I'm a great-grandmother. I was 65 at the time. Another passenger was an 81-year-old Catholic nun. 5 Jews on board, 3 Israeli citizens, 1 member of the Greek Parliament, 17 different countries represented, quite a few Americans. Many of us seniors. Israel threatened to blow us out of the water prior to our departure. During our stay on Cyprus, there were Israelis watching our every move. We all knew we could be arrested or die on the trip. My granddaughters and a friend witnessed a codicil to my will to make sure my obligations would be met if I didn't make it back. My grandkids were proud of me and gave me 2 wonderful magnets that made me realize they understood why I was going. Of course, we were all relieved there was no incident. We landed in Gaza after 33 hours of rough seas, but overjoyed at the incredible greeting of 40,000 Palestinians at a small seaport. We were the first people to land at a Gaza port from foreign countries as guests of the people in 41 years. All of us were offered citizenship and passports as citizens of Palestine. I have one stamped Gaza Port. When we left, our passports were stamped with a new stamp made for us because it was a first. Only Gaza boats or Israeli ships have been off Gaza shores until our voyage. During our 6-day stay, we went to the parliament building and sat in the seats of Israeli incarcerated Palestinian parliament members, 45 of them arrested after they won their election to parliament. One was a woman who has been released from prison since. The others still in Israeli prisons since the internationally monitored elections of 2006. The parliament building, the symbol of democracy, was among the buildings bombed last year. I saved an LA Times picture with a bombed-out ceiling from January 2009. You know that the Islamic University was also bombed. 60% of the students are women. The university teaching hospital also was bombed. 11,000 homes were destroyed and 5 UN buildings. You know all this. I remember stuff. I read the LA Times. I listened to KPFK and lost track of you until yesterday, coming here. Thank you for anything you can do to help inform people about Gaza. My friends are on board the MV Rachel Corrie, still heading for Gaza. They were missed in the roundup by Israel because they are a big freighter moving slowly from Ireland. FreeGaza.org has the latest on what's happening. They are moving towards Gaza now. Thanks for your support of the starving people of Gaza. 68% of Gaza are minors under the age of 18. Kathleen O'Connor Wong. And yet, I will always find people who will tell me, although they're becoming fewer and fewer, that my reportage regarding anything having to do with a new atrocity committed by Israel, and I am even-handed in this. This is the thing that pisses me off. I have condemned over and over and over again terrorist bombing by Hamas, by any organization in the Middle East. But I've also reporting that the origins of the truck bomb or the car bomb rest with the Irgun or the Stern Gang, one of the Jewish organizations that blew the hell out of the British to get them out of Palestine in the 40s. And it was the truck bomb that blew a hole in the Hotel King David that killed, I forget how many British military, that finally resulted in the British saying to hell with it and leaving. I have met very few Americans in the past 25 years since the first Intifada who have any kind of a working knowledge about the Middle East at all, especially where it concerns the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I've told you before that I interviewed once before he was assassinated, Meir Kahane, who was about as right-wing where it concerned Israel as you could possibly become. And he wrote a book. I don't know how many people have read it. Probably very few Americans, if any, have read it. The book was entitled They Must Go, they being the Palestinians. And Kahane made a point of before he would submit to an interview, or not submit, but before he would agree to an interview with me. It was in studio at WSB in Atlanta. Before he would agree to an interview, he quizzed me and questioned me. What is your scholarship? What do you know? What do you think you know? And the questions were pointed and they were deliberate, and somehow I passed his test, even though, even then, my position was that Israel, the Israelis, the Jews that went there after World War II were in fact invaders. And he accepted that. He said, of course. What? Of course we are. To the Palestinians, we're worse than invaders. We're aliens. We're the enemy. So whenever I get a letter from someone who identifies himself as Jewish, who will say, as Stuart did, you know, I agree with so much of what you say. I'm a faithful listener, yada, 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 except for Israel. And then I read the email and I see that the person writing to me, and I'm trying to pick on Stuart, you know, this happens many, many times. The person writing to me who accuses me of not being balanced and fair in this one area displays a one-sidedness that is gagging, that does not recognize the rights of these people, the Palestinians. There are some in that community, in the Jewish community in this country, who refuse to even acknowledge that such a classification exists. There's no such thing, they'll tell you, as Palestinians. That's a construct. That's made up. So, to the people who have to say, I get lots of emails from American Jews who say, thank God you're telling the truth. So, I, you know, whatever. But to the people who accuse me of not knowing what I'm talking about or being one-sided, I, you know, all I can respond with is to say, no, you're absolutely wrong. I do know what I'm talking about. I have been reading about, I'm not talking about the popular press, I'm talking about books about this issue for over 20 years. Books written by Arabs, books written by Jews, books written by pro-Israel authors, pro-Palestinian authors. I've read so much about this issue, my head is spinning. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that for the most part I stay away, and I've said why I've stayed away from this issue. Because there's no solution. It's not going to happen. Ever. But then an issue comes up like this. Attack. An assault. An invasion. A murder spree. Against a ship bringing humanitarian relief. To people who have been surrounded. By an invading enemy. The Palestinian people are suffering to a degree that if Americans had to approach anything like this, we wouldn't put up with it. We would use whatever we could get our hands on to fight back, and you know this as well as I do. But the Palestinians, to most people in the West, they don't exist. Why don't they just, God gave that land to Israel. Yeah, God gave that land to Israel. The problem is, God gave that land to Israel a couple thousand years after the Chinese had invented writing, so go figure. For the hour. Oh, damn, I forgot to take phone calls again tonight. Oh. Right after this murder spree by the Israeli Defense Forces occurred on Monday night, Marcy Winograd put up at her website her position about this. And we got an email from her prior to that murder spree. It's some other stuff, but she has in the email to us, I don't think she'd mind our sharing this with you. She said, ever since 2006, when I first ran against Jane Harmon, I've been challenging her to a debate. She has consistently refused, even when the Jewish Journal, wanting to sponsor a debate, was able to get a rabbi in the valley to offer his 800-seat sanctuary gratis. I did, however, have an exchange with Harmon at the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party when Harmon and I were on the same panel, much to her shock. She came in once I left the room to take care of another commitment. When I returned, she didn't see me slip back on the panel. I'm attaching a clip from the impromptu debate. If you're interested, I can also send you links to our respective cable ads in which I accuse her of selling us out to Wall Street, and she accuses me of living in a bubble where I would kill the defense industry. And then some more, and then Marcy. Well, vis-a-vis that, Norman Solomon had a piece up. Michael said the problem, obviously, is larger than just Jane Harmon. This is from the middle of Norman Solomon's article the other day. Quote, after claiming that Marcy Winograd, quote, wants to kill the defense budget, putting thousands more people out of work and exposing our nation to attack, end quote, Harmon's commercial declared, quote, Congressman Henry Waxman says in Marcy Winograd's vision, Israel would cease to exist, end quote. Yes, Solomon writes, liberal Congressman Waxman has distinguished himself by supplying the most demagogic ammo in Hartman's reelection arsenal, and endorsements from several other members of the Progressive Caucus, including John Conyers, Barney Frank, Jim McGovern, and Lynn Woolsey, have given Harmon more cover. From Michael in Roswell. So, the story of David and Goliath, does that ring a bell here? Henry Waxman says that, according to Marcy Winograd's vision, Israel would cease to exist. I mean, what is this? What does that mean? I mean, what a slanderous thing for Waxman to say. And supporting Harmon, John Conyers, Barney Frank, Jim McGovern, Lynn Woolsey. Well, are we having Marcy on? Haven't heard back yet? Well, the primary is Tuesday in California. In the 36th? She's in 36th district? I think it's the 36th. And I hope we get her on. Regarding my emailer, Stuart, have I got time to get this in? I think I do. Also from Michael. Stuart needs to get a life separate and apart from Israel. The country has been in the grip of right-wing thugs for 60 years. They are no different than the right-wing thugs in this country. They want to keep power, and they do it through a process of encouraging a paranoid siege mentality in Israelis. When they run out of ways to provoke Palestinians, they do something really over the top. Lebanon 06, Gaza 08, the Flotilla attack this week, which generates general world opprobrium, with the inevitable exception of the U.S., thus convincing Israeli citizens that the world is out to get them. But as long as they feel protected by the U.S., they pretend they are sheltered by the moral approval of the most militarily powerful state on earth. As long as the U.S. government continues to support them with arms and to defend them in the U.N. Security Council, the right wing in Israel will be able to justify any military excess to its citizens. Only when the U.S. withdraws its support will the citizens of Israel come to the conclusion that the Likudniks have gone too far. And it's for that reason that I suggest that Stuart, your emailer, pull his head out of his ass and thinks. In Israel, the United States is coddling right-wing thugs, and the Israeli people who want peace deserve better. His reflexive defense of Israel which has had Gaza under blockade ever since the election 3 years ago, which is designed as collective punishment with the approval of the U.S., his reflexive defense of Israel is the reflexive defense of right-wingers. Israel isn't providing the aid required. Malnutrition and anemia are affecting two-thirds of Gaza residents, and food insufficiency is endemic. The Israeli right wing is doing what it has done for 60 damn years. It is trying its utmost to make life so miserable for Palestinians that they'll give up and leave territory that Israel wants. Israel has sought to expand its borders through war, occupation, and colonization since its inception, in violation of a bushel basket of international laws and UN Security Council resolutions. That's the background. Israel is a haven for right-wing punks, and they have not only isolated and ghettoized the Palestinians, they've terrorized and propagandized Israelis, too. They're no different than the right-wing conservatives in this country. They're cut from the same cloth. That's why they get along so well. Michael. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.